Welcome to the Weekly Digest from Personalized Intelligence, the AI edition for Tuesday, July 7th, 2026.
Today, we are tracking the transition from passive interface to active agency, examining how models are moving from answering questions to executing complex, autonomous workflows. We are seeing a structural departure from the era of simple chatbots toward a landscape of integrated, self-directed systems.
It is no longer about what the AI says, but what it actually does.
Stepping back, that brings us to our lead story, the agentic shift. We are moving far beyond the era of the simple chatbot to understand the emergence of autonomous agents capable of multi-step reasoning and independent action.
AWS recently hit 4 Save 1 outages in just 90 days, and the common denominator wasn't a hardware failure or a solar flare, it was the rollout of autonomous coding agents. Today we're looking at the agentic shift, or as the industry likes to call it, moving beyond the chatbot.
It's a massive shift in the underlying compute economics, Maya. We're moving from simple, low-token chat interactions to complex agentic workflows, where a single decoding task can consume roughly 1,200 times the tokens used in a standard chat.
So agentic workflows is just a fancy way of saying we've unleashed a swarm of digital locusts that eat electricity and tokens by the billions.
It's more about autonomy than consumption, though the cost is real. We're seeing the end of the token subsidy era. This past May and June, we saw major players like Walmart and Uber transition from unlimited seat-based subscriptions to strict usage-based budgets and caps because the sheer volume of agentic looping is simply too expensive to subsidize.
Which means the unlimited era is officially dead. It's a token scarcity era now.
Something to flag here, that scarcity is forcing a change in how models are built. We aren't just looking for the smartest model anymore, we're looking for the most efficient implementer. Take Anthropic's recent release of Sonnet 5. It's not trying to outreason the massive Opus 4.8 models in a vacuum. Instead, it uses a high-volume, automatic Ralph loop architecture, essentially spawning subagents and performing self-adversarial reviews to achieve high performance in tool-use benchmarks like GDPVAL.
So instead of one genius sitting in a room, we have a massive, frantic committee of mediocre assistants all shouting at each other until they get it right.
It's more like a highly structured hierarchy. You might use a model like Fable 5 as a superintelligent advisor for complex planning, but then hand the actual execution off to Sonnet 5, which acts as the fast and efficient implementer. The goal is agentic follow-through, the ability to actually complete a long-running task across multiple software interfaces without getting stuck.
But that follow-through sounds a lot like unsupervised wandering if you don't have a leash on them.
And that is precisely where the security bottleneck has moved. Devrit Rishi has argued that the primary obstacle to enterprise AI ROI isn't model capability anymore. It's the lack of a risk management framework for what these agents are allowed to do. We are moving from read-only access, where an AI just summarizes an email, to write capabilities, where an agent can modify a database or execute a trade.
The read-to-write gap. It's the difference between an intern reading the company books and an intern having the keys to the vault and a signed blank check.
So here's the picture, the risks are nonlinear. We're seeing the emergence of promiscuous agents, those capable of navigating browsers and file systems to bypass disabled connectors. There's even a documented BioShocking jailbreak, where an attacker uses prompt injection to exploit the fact that AI browsers merge the control plane, the decision-making, with the data plane, the web reading. This allows an attacker to force the model into a fictitious context, effectively bypassing safety guardrails to access sensitive credentials or repositories.
So the agent thinks it's playing a game, and while it's playing, it accidentally hands over the corporate login.
It's a structural architectural flaw. And it's not just external hackers. There's a massive internal risk called interagent data leakage. Imagine Agent A is forbidden from seeing payroll data, but Agent B has access. If Agent A can query Agent B through a shared communication layer, Agent A has effectively bypassed the security policy.
It's a digital version of the Chinese whispers game, but instead of a kid losing the message, the company loses its entire intellectual property portfolio.
To fight this, we're seeing a move toward what Rishi calls a Switzerland-like neutral third party. You can't bake security into the orchestrator or the model itself because you need a platform-agnostic control plane. This is where things like the Rubrik Agent Cloud come in, using small language models, SLMs, as real-time guardrails. You can't use a massive slow LLM to monitor every single input and output. The latency would kill the agent's utility. You need tiny, fine-tuned SLMs deployed at every node to detect anomalies and enforce policy in real time.
I love the idea of using small, specialized police bots to watch the big, powerful worker bots. But does this actually solve the data problem, or does it just add more layers of bureaucracy?
It might actually make the data problem harder. Alberto Pan from Denodo has pointed out that the shift to agentic AI is breaking traditional lakehouse architectures. Traditional systems rely on centralized, heavy replication, which creates latency. But agents need real-time access. If your data is even 1 minute out of date, an autonomous agent making operational decisions is essentially hallucinating based on stale facts.
So the more we move toward agentic workflows, the more our central databases become obsolete because they can't keep up with the speed of the agents.
The pattern is clear. We're seeing a trust gap because of this latency. Agents are inherently unpredictable. They need to navigate unmapped, fragmented data sources to solve novel tasks. If you try to force them into a single centralized entry point for the sake of GDPR compliance, you risk the centralization trap. But if you let them roam free, you face the ad hoc trap of fragmented, unmanageable data layers.
It sounds like we're building a digital ecosystem that is fundamentally unmanageable by design.
It's even changing the very nature of software engineering. In the RKGI3 competition, we're seeing that brute force approaches, where an agent just tries every possible move or being penalized. The new metric is action efficiency. To win, agents have to demonstrate high-level cognitive guidance. However, Jerome Kattar has warned about understanding debt. As coding agents move faster than humans can review, developers are losing the ability to maintain a mental model of their own codebase. We're moving toward requirements-based engineering, where the human's job is no longer writing code, but writing the formal, numbered tests that the agent must pass.
So the engineer becomes a high-level auditor, and the work is just managing the technical debt left behind by 1,000 tiny automated commits.
And that's not just in software. In mechanical engineering, companies like Jaguar Land Rover are using agentic optimization to jump from 50 aerodynamic evaluations a day to 1,500. The agent isn't just checking a box, it's manipulating CAD platforms and executing design changes. We're seeing a transition from AI as a consumer of optimized code to AI as an agent capable of recursive self-improvement.
It's a loop. The AI writes the code, the AI optimizes the hardware, and the AI optimizes the next version of itself.
It's a loop that could lead to engineering superintelligence, where human intuition and machine optimization exist in the same weight set. But there's a darker side to this autonomy. As we see agents start to inhabit the economy, autonomously hiring and paying one another via marketplaces like OKEx using digital currency, we're approaching a point where the agent fabric is a completely opaque layer of commerce.
A machine-led economy where the humans are just the ones paying the electricity bill.
Or the ones left behind in the capability overhang. We call it bot-sitting, the manual, exhausting labor of feeding context and verifying that the agent hasn't hallucinated a catastrophic error.
It's the new pink-collar job of the AI era.
There's also a regulatory dimension to this. In the US, Senator Mark Warner has proposed a duty of loyalty for agents to ensure a travel agent bot doesn't prioritize a Hilton booking just because they have a corporate partnership. Meanwhile, in China, the Cyberspace Administration is already targeting anthropomorphic agents, forcing companies like Alibaba to strip away personal assistant features to avoid the legal ambiguity of human-like personas.
So one side is trying to legislate loyalty into the code, and the other is trying to strip the humanity out of the interface.
Either way, the era of the simple, predictable chatbot is over. We are entering an era of autonomous, high-stakes, and high-cost agents that require an entirely new architecture for governance and data.
Legal departments are going to need a much larger budget for agentic auditing before the end of the year.
Watch the emergence of the token budget in enterprise RFPs. If companies start prioritizing usage caps over model intelligence, the transition to agentic autonomy is officially being throttled by the bottom line.
But if we can secure the agents, the next battleground isn't software, it's the physical machines they run on. I was reading this morning that a tech company is now building specialized, interlocking concrete blocks that don't use grout or bolts, just so they can build a nuclear reactor shield in 48 hours instead of 3 months. It feels like we're moving straight into a sci-fi construction simulator.
It sounds like overkill until you realize that the entire global AI strategy is currently hitting a massive physical bottleneck. We aren't just talking about code anymore. We're talking about a high-stakes, hardware-driven arms race for silicon, memory, and raw electricity.
So the cloud isn't actually an ethereal, weightless thing floating in the atmosphere. It's actually a very heavy, very hungry collection of massive data centers and custom-made potato chips.
Two things stand out. And the era of just buying whatever NVIDIA has in stock is ending. We're seeing a massive shift toward custom silicon. OpenAI is betting big on their Jalapeno chip using a 3nm process, which essentially means they are trying to architect hardware specifically for the transformer models they run.
Wait, so OpenAI is essentially trying to build their own personal version of the internet's plumbing?
They are. And they aren't alone. Amazon's Trainium business is actually hitting a $20 billion annual revenue run rate as of this past quarter, which means AWS is effectively pivoting from being a software service to a hardware powerhouse. They're even starting to sell those chips to external operators to undercut NVIDIA.
It sounds like everyone is trying to escape NVIDIA's gravitational pull by building their own little planets.
It's a massive vertical integration play. But the bottleneck isn't just the logic chips, it's the memory. We've moved from a period of memory oversupply to a critical shortage of high bandwidth memory, or HBM. This has turned the market into a high barrier monopoly. If you look at the recent market shifts, SK Hynix has actually overtaken Samsung in market value because they took a massive, almost reckless risk on HBM production during their 2023 losses. Meanwhile, Samsung is struggling with the timing of their technological leaps.
So if you're a model developer, you're essentially stuck in a hardware lottery where you're praying your chip supplier actually delivers.
The implication runs deeper. Even Micron is trying to leapfrog the entire competition by skipping HBM3 and going straight to HBM3E, which has already locked up their entire 2026 supply pipeline. It's a game of supply chain warfare. Even Anthropic is reportedly in talks with Samsung to design custom chips, specifically to create leverage against Nvidia's pricing.
It's all very intense, but I can't help but notice that while everyone is fighting over chips, the US government is busy adding more layers of no to the whole process.
You're referring to the new licensing regime. Under the Trump administration's recent executive actions, the US has moved to a default no environment. The Commerce Department is essentially picking winners and losers through a non-transparent licensing process. This creates a massive geographic moat. It's great for US-based frontier models, but it gives a huge advantage to non-US labs like Cohere, who can operate outside these specific US regulatory boundaries.
It's a bit of a paradox, isn't it? The US wants to restrict China's access to models, but the trade policy is currently so incoherent that we're simultaneously restricting model access while aggressively exporting the very advanced chips that allow Chinese firms to train their own powerful models.
It is a contradiction. And that tension extends to the physical infrastructure too. We're seeing a rise in anti-infrastructure populism in the US. Groups like Humans First are protesting the expansion of data centers due to land use and environmental concerns. There is even evidence suggesting some of these domestic protests are being fueled by Chinese interests to slow down American scaling.
So it's not just a tech war, it's a localized backyard fence war.
And if we can't scale the chips, we have to scale the energy. That brings us to the gigasite model. Companies like Valor Atomics are trying to solve the energy scarcity problem by building massive sites that combine power, land, and fiber. As Isaiah Taylor notes, we are entering an era of hyper-techno-industrialism, where the widespread adoption of AI and robotics effectively converts human labor costs into energy costs. The price of everything physical will eventually just be a function of how much electricity you can throw at it.
It's a bit sobering. We're trading human effort for kilowatt hours.
But the software is getting smarter at managing that scarcity. We're seeing a move toward edge AI. Raman Hassani from Liquid AI argues that hardware providers can no longer just provide raw compute. They need to provide an integrated intelligence layer that optimizes for the physical constraints of a device. If you can use software to provide the juice that the hardware lacks, you win the market.
It's a world where the software is essentially trying to pretend the hardware isn't struggling.
And it's working. We're even seeing models like Fable 5 outperform much larger models in writing highly optimized CUDA code. The AI is beginning to optimize the very hardware-level software that it relies on to run. It's a self-reinforcing loop of efficiency.
Investors need to watch the energy-to-compute ratio in those new gigasite bids.
The next real signal will be a major breakthrough in non-transformer architectures, like Mamba, actually breaking through the hardware dependency we're seeing with the Jalapeno chip.
But if the hardware is this hard to build, I wonder how much the people actually using these tools are going to have to change their entire way of thinking. I don't know, Alex. This whole future of work narrative feels like we're just rebranding mass displacement as entrepreneurial freedom. It sounds great in a LinkedIn post, but for most people, trading a steady paycheck for the liberty of being a solo founder sounds less like an upgrade and much more like an invitation to burnout.
I hear that, but the data isn't showing a collapse. It's showing a massive migration of talent. We're seeing a fundamental shift from traditional job descriptions to what we call functional archetypes, moving away from doing a job and toward managing teams of autonomous agents that execute specific parts of a workflow.
Functional archetypes. That is a very expensive way of saying we're replacing your middle management with a subscription service.
It's more about the lowering of the barrier to entry. The AI Daily Brief notes that the 2025 cohort of new businesses is reaching $1 million in cumulative revenue at a rate 30% higher than the 2023 cohort and three times faster than the 2019 cohort. AI is acting as a functional surrogate for the employees you used to have to hire, covering the technical, marketing, and sales gaps that used to require a full co-founding team.
Okay, so the solopreneur is the new king. But if anyone can launch a company with a few prompts, doesn't that just turn the market into a race to the bottom? If the cost of creation is basically zero, doesn't the value of the product also drop to zero?
Actually, the bottleneck is shifting from the ability to make things to the ability to curate them. The AI Daily Brief highlights that the editor role is becoming a critical strategic bottleneck. In an era of low-cost creation, you need a specialized mindset to look at a massive volume of high-speed prototypes and decide which ones actually deserve human attention and market bandwidth.
So we're moving from a world of builders to a world of critics. That sounds like a lot of people sitting in rooms saying, "No, not that one," while the agents do all the actual heavy lifting.
But that heavy lifting is exactly what's enabling these person-light or even person-nil organizations. Jack Clark has pointed out that as agents master complex, multi-hour workflows in environments like Oz or GitLab, we might see companies emerge that simply don't require human personnel to function at scale. We're seeing a divergence where solo business applications are skyrocketing while traditional employer registrations are flat. It's a shift toward high velocity, low overhead commerce where success is measured by revenue ramp speed, not headcount.
This is exactly what worries me. It's fine if a developer in San Francisco wants to be a prototyper using a fleet of agents. But what happens to the person whose entire career was built on the maintenance or administration that these agents are now eating?
That's where the worker migration comes in. We aren't just seeing jobs disappear, we're seeing the composition of roles change. Even in high adoption firms, Ramp found that headcount growth for entry-level positions actually reached 12% because there is a massive new demand for people who can act as orchestrators or risk stewards. You need humans to manage the increased operational speed and to act as the greasers of governance gears to prevent the system from spinning out of control.
So the new job is basically being a high-stakes babysitter for a swarm of hyper-intelligent bots.
It's more like being a conductor of a much more complex orchestra. You're moving from prompt engineering, which is just mastering syntax, to a reasoning partnership. You provide the high-level decision-making, the taste, and the strategic direction, while the agents handle the execution. The real skill is product thinking, the ability to use these tools to prototype custom solutions for your own department, effectively bypassing the old IT or HR bottlenecks.
It's a pretty intense way to live. You're essentially saying that to stay relevant, you have to become a one-person corporation, managing a digital workforce, while constantly pivoting to avoid being outcompeted by a person-nil startup.
It's certainly a more volatile landscape, but the efficiency gains are undeniable. We're seeing the extreme tail of the economy, these tiny, hyper-efficient startups, running the R&D experiments that the larger, traditional organizations will eventually be forced to adopt just to survive.
Investors need to stop looking at headcount as a proxy for scale and start looking at the speed of the feedback loop.
Keep an eye on the editor bottleneck. If we see a massive spike in failed, high-volume product launches, it means the human capacity to curate is failing to keep up with the AI's capacity to create.
But if we can automate the building of software and the management of supply chains, does the next frontier of intelligence move from the digital screen into the physical lab? 50%. That is the failure rate for drugs hitting phase 3 clinical trials. We are essentially paying billions of dollars to participate in a high-stakes coin flip.
It's more than a coin flip, Maya. It's a structural flaw in how we pick targets. As Ion AI noted, these failures happen because we target downstream symptoms rather than root causes. But causal AI can now identify genes with no parents in disease pathways to find the actual drivers.
We're moving from treating the fever to fixing the thermostat. But even with a map, the data is a disaster. Most biotech data looks less like a clean spreadsheet and more like a pile of crumpled handwritten notes from a doctor who hasn't slept since 2014.
That's the bottleneck. Ion AI highlighted that over 60% of companies have data that simply isn't AI-ready, requiring specialized pipelines like Bullfrog AI's BF Prep to turn that unstructured mess into something machine-readable.
And even if you clean the data, the models are still hallucinating molecules that look great on screen but fall apart the moment they touch actual biology. It's like a digital architect designing a skyscraper made of infinitely thin glass.
That's exactly why the shift is moving toward sub-angstrom precision. Leighton Space explained that a tiny 0.6 Ehring deviation can turn a functional hydrogen bond into a non-functional clashing error, meaning we need models like Pearl that use diffusion and physics-based guidance to ensure structural validity.
So we're moving from close enough to atomically perfect.
We can trace that further. We are moving toward an agentic lab-in-the-loop future where LLM-based agents like Project Sapphire can autonomously optimize for toxicity and solubility 24/7.
Investors should stop betting on first-in-class moonshots and start looking at the companies mastering best-in-class optimization of existing molecules. Keep an eye on the first reported agent-led drug that passes a safety trial without a human ever manually tweaking the chemical structure. But if AI can solve the microscopic architecture of life, does it also change how we perceive the macroscopic world of art and design? I think we need to stop calling it generative art and start calling it simulated reality, because at this point, the idea that we're just making pretty pictures is becoming a massive understatement.
It's more than just aesthetics, Maya. We are witnessing the birth of visual intelligence where models don't just render pixels, but actually understand the underlying physics of the scene.
right? Because soon the AI won't just generate a sunset, it'll be able to simulate a spilled drink, a collapsing skyscraper, or a middle manager's existential dread during a Zoom call.
If you look at the technical shift, it's moving from diffusion to what Dustin Podol calls flow matching. As Practical AI noted, this uses a velocity map to navigate hyperdimensional space, essentially directing a path from random noise toward the manifold of real, coherent images.
Instead of just guessing what a cat looks like, the model is essentially following a precise wind to land on a perfect image.
Worth noting, this isn't just about art. In context editing, models are acting as an unintentional bridge to world models because, as Practical AI points out, manipulating an image, like showing water spilling from a glass, forces the model to internally simulate causal relationships and physical properties. This is the foundational layer for future robotics.
It sounds impressive, but the legal landscape is looking like a total disaster zone.
It is.
AI in Business reported that Midjourney is pursuing a tables-flip legal strategy, seeking discovery of Disney and Warner Brothers' internal AI workflows to prove that using unlicensed content is actually an industry-wide norm.
They're basically saying if we're guilty, everyone is.
And while the creative potential is massive, the economics are brutal. AI in Business highlighted that even with Google's Gemini Omni Flash optimized to 10 cents per second of video, generating a single hour of footage would still incur prohibitive costs.
Hollywood lawyers are going to have a field day with those margins. The Department of Justice will have to decide if industry norm is a valid defense for copyright infringement. Watch for the first major studio to release a high-fidelity, AI-generated trailer that doesn't trigger a massive injunction. As we wrap up this edition, the throughline is clear. We are witnessing the structural reconfiguration of computational value. We are moving away from a world where intelligence was a cheap, conversational commodity, and into an era where value is defined by the orchestration of resource-heavy, autonomous workflows. The focus has shifted from how well a model can speak to how effectively an agent can execute, all while navigating a landscape of strict usage budgets and escalating energy constraints.
The data tells a story. The single most important implication here is for the enterprise architect. The strategic calculus is no longer about selecting the most capable model, like an Anthropic Opus 4.8 or a Gemini Omni, but about managing the massive token inflation that comes with agentic autonomy. For leaders at companies like Walmart or Uber, the priority has pivoted from maximizing model intelligence to designing governance layers that can prevent a single autonomous workflow from exhausting an entire quarterly compute budget in a single afternoon. Success now depends on building the guardrail infrastructure, using SLMs and specialized monitoring to oversee a workforce that is increasingly capable but exponentially more expensive to run.
It is a high-stakes transition from being a writer to being a supervisor of a digital fleet.
To see if this theory holds, keep a close eye on the next round of RKGI3 competition results. If we see a breakthrough driven by non-transformer architectures that can achieve complex reasoning without the massive token overhead of current agentic loops, it will prove that we can break the current cycle of hardware dependency and return to a more sustainable scaling model.
That will be the true signal of whether we can escape the current gravity of the hardware arms race. Thanks for joining us this Tuesday. We'll see you next week.